Okay, hi everybody. So tonight we're going to be talking about building connection and navigating boundaries. I want to ask you all to get a paper and pen or computer device or something that you can, jot down some notes to yourself as we go along. Because we're going to be hopefully talking about some stuff that you want to take forward with you and work on with your spouse between this time and next time or whenever. And before we get into the material, I just wanted to clarify because I got a few queries about who this is for and what this is for because there seem to be two different workshops for couples. This workshop's core intention is to address the issues and needs of couples who were dating, got engaged, got married, were newly married, possibly during quarantine, corona, and this whole kind of crazy time that we are in. But to my mind, the concepts that we're talking about, which are really core topics, are for couples at any stage. These are things I'm trying to address, things that are key to solidifying and to addressing, which then are, of course, going to be sustaining and helping in times of crisis. But I hope to use some examples, or I certainly would address questions or specific concerns if people want to send them in about things that they've gone through and how they can navigate it and address it. But because I think that a lot of what's gone on and the troubles or struggles, I should say, that people have really are best addressed by things that everybody could be helped with. It's, in my mind, broader than just that age or stage. It's broader than just helping or dealing during corona. It's tasks and skills and understanding for always and in crisis, maybe even more important during crisis, but it's for always. And obviously, one of the things that's important for always is building and attending to our connection and navigating the different boundaries that we have. Obviously, navigating our boundaries when we're quarantined together becomes even more of an intense need or sometimes of an intense struggle. For some people, it actually was less of a struggle because there was no question about whether we would be spending time together or not, because we were in quarantine together. And some couples actually who had already been married for a while and struggling over one person's need or just life circumstance for boundaries that included being out a lot or not having a lot of time for family and couplehood, all of a sudden there was no more struggle over it. So some couples actually did a little bit better during quarantine than they had been doing. But it becomes difficult if we're quarantined and I have a need for more boundaries or more alone time or more independent doing or thinking. And so we're going to talk generally and then we're going to talk specifically. Some people, when I do a workshop like this, whether it's because they've specifically gone through something that they can identify, like a struggle or difficulty because of a crisis, or for difficulties in other ways, saying, why aren't we talking about the difficult stuff yet? Why aren't you talking yet about negotiating our differences or conflict resolution or conflict management or communication in conflict? And the reason is I guess what I want you to do is I want you to think for a minute about a task that you don't look forward to. Maybe it's organizing your paperwork or organizing your closets, or think of something that you know needs to get done that you really don't relish doing. And then imagine being able to either A, tackle that chore fresh, energized, plenty of sleep, not hungry, or having to tackle that chore exhausted from the day, not having eaten enough, etc. Obviously, I think everyone would agree that tackling a chore like that, or any chore that's difficult or stresses us or takes energy out of us, we're always going to do better if we're tackling it from a nourished and replenished place and not from a zapped, sapped energy place. So the reason that we're kind of starting and having the first two sessions talking about, last week we talked about our real initial task when we got married and how to take responsibility for ourselves and what we bring and what we need to the marriage. And this week talking about building connection and navigating boundaries is that before we want to talk about how to manage conflict, we want to be able or feel like we have a solid footing, that we have that nourishment and that fortitude that can help us in the difficult times, whether it's navigating something that's going to come up or having to resolve and put to rest some conflict or difficulty or struggle we had because of things that came up during quarantine or are coming up now during this kind of still unsettled time. We want to be able to tackle it together from a good place in our relationship. So that's why we're starting out with sort of the how do we build, how do we either build or attend to, because there's some couples that are listening, even though they're not new couples, and that's fine too. I think there's what to gain at any stage. So tonight we're going to really be digging into talking about solidifying that connection, making sure that it's not only solid, but that it can be sustained. It's sometimes easier to connect and be in that zone of connection and everything's great at the beginning of a marriage, kind of that honeymoon phase, which I think is also a stressor for some of the couples that missed that honeymoon phase because, like we talked about last time, things, we all kind of landed with a bit of a thud into reality without that cushioning of, fairy tale-ness that a lot of couples do have in the beginning of their marriage. And so this might be, if never more so for new couples, an important thing to address. But like I said, in addition, it's important to keep addressing it, even once you feel like you're on solid ground, to keep attending to it, because it's such an important thing to handle life together from a good place and not a stressed, depleted place. And what we're going to be addressing is how people connect, the differences between two people's styles of connecting, and how to manage the differences in our styles instead of how to accommodate the difference in our styles, instead of trying to change each other's styles to suit what we're comfortable with, because that always winds up in a big tug of war and a lot of dissatisfaction and stress in an area that's supposed to give nourishment, which then leaves you depleted for the actual areas of stress. And we're going to talk a little bit about what to do and how to manage it when it's hard to give what your spouse likes to get, because you have such a different style or such a different orientation to closeness. And we're going to be, in terms of talking about boundaries, we're going to be talking about people's differences in need for and appetite for independence versus closeness, because there are differences that people encounter in their marriage, and it doesn't make a couple a bad or mismatched couple, as long as they can navigate those differences and respect the differences in a way that accommodates everybody's needs. So the first thing I want you to do is we're going to do sort of like a little imagination exercise to help us get grounded in what we're talking about when we're talking about mismatches or different styles, and how that can go terribly wrong with the best of intentions, as a way of sort of setting us up for worst case scenario. Because if we can address worst case scenario, then the rest of it will be even easier in terms of giving to each other and creating that closeness. So imagine for a moment, think of somebody that you are very close with, have a really good relationship with, somebody other than your spouse. It's a friend, it's a cousin, it's a sibling, somebody you're really close with. And it's your birthday. And you know your friend, is cousin, sibling, is gonna at some point show up. And then, lo and behold, there's a knock on the door. And you open the door. And this person, this cousin or friend or sibling, is standing there beaming from ear to ear with the ugliest armchair you've ever seen. They yell, "Surprise! Happy birthday!" And he or she starts working to get inside the house with your gift, your big, ugly armchair. It's not just ugly. It doesn't fit anywhere. It doesn't go with anything. And when this person urges you to take a seat, it's a chair. Not particularly comfortable, not amazing. It's a chair. But this cousin, sibling, friend is so thrilled. They thought and thought what you could use, and you had once said about there's no great, you know, your furniture, you don't know, whatever, and they saw this, and they would love to have it, but they already have one like it, so they wanted to get it for you, and they're so happy to give it to you. And what do? Right? Well, if you were raised like most of us, you say, "Thank you. Wow, you shouldn't have." And you start to think about, what am I going to do with this? How am I going to keep this around for when they come, but have it hidden away for when anybody else comes? What am I going to do with this? What am I going to do next birthday? Oh gosh, you're going to start worrying about next birthday. You might start feeling resentful about the chair. You might just feel resigned about the chair. But whichever of the above, you're not feeling particularly given to, even though your friend, sibling, cousin spent time and money and effort and thought into giving you this hideous chair, what you feel is a hideous chair. This is the idea or the concept that inspired something that some of you, a concept that some of you may have heard of, Gary Chapman's The Five Love Languages. It's a concept that, or it addresses the idea that someone you feel close to, but in particular, we're talking about spouse, can totally miss the boat when it comes to giving you what would make you feel cared about or loved. And his idea, which we're going to get into, but we're also going to move beyond. We're going to add to the concept, and we're going to move beyond the concept, because I think we need to broaden it to help us address all of the other issues we want to address tonight. But that concept, that core concept, that two people, even two people who care and know and really want to be together and are compatible in many, many other ways, are not always going to get or have, I should say, the same love language, are going to know exactly what the other one wants to get or what's going to make the other one really feel loved, and will by default, as we talked about last time, in terms of what you need when you're anxious or when you're, what you need when you're down, and how that's your responsibility to kind of know that and to inform your spouse. Here too, in terms of what will make you feel cared about, is going to, what you're going to get if you don't figure it out and we don't figure out how to talk about that, what we're going to get is what our spouse would want to get, because that's what we're left with when we don't have a conversation with each other about this, which many people don't have a out and out discussion about it for a number of reasons we'll talk about. And so what I'm left to give you is what I would want to get, which is this chair that I think is fabulous, but which you don't have room for, you don't have an interest in, and which you actually think is horrible. Now, maybe it's not an exact metaphor. Maybe the chair metaphor is extreme. So let's soften it a bit. There are times when what we get, because what our spouse would want to get, is actually something that is uncomfortable to us or unappealing to us. But more often than not, and equally as problematic, almost equally as problematic, is when it's not something not quite as bad as the chair. But imagine, let's change the metaphor and imagine for a minute you open the door and your friend, cousin, sibling who you anticipated coming by with something is holding balloons. Okay, that's cute. No one dislikes balloons, but you might think to yourself, hey, I'm an adult. Okay, I won't have to figure out where they're going to go. You know, they'll be dead soon at some point. They don't have to match with anything. They don't have to be comfortable. But it's like, fine. Okay, it's nice. They thought of me. It's cute. But it's if not resentment inspiring, it's parf, it's fine. It's not meaningful in the way that they meant it to be meaningful. And it's not meaningful in the way that we want to make sure our spouse feels from the effort that we make. Fine isn't enough when we're trying to create a sense of nourishment and sustenance for our spouse in our efforts and in our actions to make them feel cared about. And so in talking about this, our goal and our aim is to help people work smarter, not harder, just smarter, and to help you avoid the situation where you don't get your needs met, your spouse or your spouse doesn't get their needs met, or that your efforts aren't having the opposite effect. And so we're gonna get deeper in to the idea of the five love languages and how to utilize that in a way, and utilize the concept in a way that doesn't aggravate each other's sense of boundaries, doesn't aggravate our sense our discomfort in terms of feeling needy or whiny if I have to ask for what I need. And so what the metaphor that I like to use, or the idea that I like to use for us to think about, is I'd like you to think about this as we talk about the love languages and the beyond, which is another category of things to think about in terms of what you need to feel nourished. I'd like you to imagine that you're creating a gift registry. Whether you're going to be writing it down, whether you're going to be typing it out, as we talk about these different areas and what you'd need or what you'd like. Think about creating a gift registry. Now, I'm imagining that most of you know what a gift registry is, but just in case you don't, a gift registry often happens. People create gift registry for their wedding. They create gift registries for a bridal shower, for a baby, for baby gifts. And the concept is that I know what I need. I know what I would appreciate. I know people want to give me a gift. So I go to the store and I go through things and I check off on the list that they give me. Probably a tablet at this point. Showing my age, I check off the things that I would really appreciate getting so that the person who wants to give me a gift doesn't have to guess, I don't have to get a gift that I then have to go return or live with because it's not returnable, but I don't need it, want it, can't use it. And I feel satisfied and they feel satisfied and no one feels uncomfortable or put upon. I don't ask for something that they can't afford because they can look at the different price ranges and choose what they're going to give based on that. And it works for everybody. I'll never forget somebody telling me the story about how when their, I think, son or daughter got engaged, they received this enormous box for the couple as an engagement present, and it was a card table and four chairs, and they could not figure out for the life of them, what in the world does this young couple need a card table and four chairs? Like, what are they going to do with this? Why would they need this? Where do they put? They couldn't imagine. She happened to get into conversation with the person who gave it. Oh, very nice. Thank you. Again, one of these things where you get it, you have to say thank you, even though you can't imagine what they were thinking. They have no use for this, and they have no space for this, and they have no interest in this. And the friend kept going on and on and on about how it was a lifesaver for them when they got married. They had no furniture and somebody had given them a card table and four chairs. And so they had something to start. So they give everybody a card table and four chairs. So it's great if it's on your registry so the person can pick it knowing you'll need it. But giving something like that when the person doesn't need it or have room for it can be a burden instead of a gift. So that's, you know, probably one of the many stories that got this idea of gift registries going. And so that's what we're going to talk about, how to create your gift registry using the concept of the five love languages and the beyond, which we're going to talk about. Now, one of the things that people often are not sure about when they start hearing the different categories and the different examples that we'll touch on for each category is they say to themselves, but what's my actual language? I like this from this category and I like that also and I like the other thing, but what's my love language? So first of all, I want to say, don't stress about that too much. Figure it out, you figure it out. You don't figure it out right now, maybe you will figure it out. But one guiding principle, and it's okay to sort of create your registry with things from all of the categories. It's not a problem. It's not a contradiction. That's fine. Create your registry with lots of different things. But if you want to know, and if you want your spouse to know sort of what's the core of feeling loved, cherished, needed, loved or cherished or cared about, is you want to think about when I'm frustrated by not having something, or when I'm down, what am I imagining that I want? What do I find myself missing or wishing for? Then, and if it kind of centers or circles around a particular one of these categories as you look them over, then that's probably your core love language. Even though you want lots of things or like lots of things or appreciate lots of things from lots of different areas, that might be your primary. I was working with somebody who, you know, was saying the same thing. Like, I like a lot of different things. I like a lot of different, you know, these examples that you're talking about. And, but throughout our working together, the sort of complaint or frustration that I heard centered very much around one particular area that never felt like, or not never felt like it was enough of this, but that was the thing that, you know, this person found a deep longing for. So think about it that way. But like I said, you know, you're creating a registry. So even if you figure out what's your number one, you don't have to skimp on your registry. You can choose from all over, as long as your spouse knows which is the primary, once you figure that out. So the first category that we're going to talk about is what is called acts of service. Somebody doing something for you. It could be they make you a cup of tea or coffee in the morning. They make your coffee, or do something for you off your to-do list so you don't have to. Or this might be the same thing, do a least favorite chore. Maybe they surprise you with lunch, or does something you forgot to do, you know, without chastising, just kind of surprising you. Asks if you need something done. Acts of service. These are things you can think about. And another guiding principle for figuring out what feels significant to you is thinking of times that your spouse did something that was really like, to you. You can ask your spouse, do you remember doing something that it looked like it was really appreciated? Or do I remember when you said to me, wow, that makes me so proud that you are able to do that and you're my spouse? That would be a different category. That's, you know, words of affirmation, which is the next category, which we'll talk about in a minute. But first, let's just stick on this concept of reminding yourself of things that your spouse did that really hit a chord for you. So let's say what you remember is when they tell you things that they appreciate about you. Hearing my spouse say, wow, that was amazing, is words of affirmation. So maybe that's my core love language. Being asked what I think, because it implies that you trust in me, which is affirmation. Telling me what you appreciate. Noticing and expressing something positive that I've done, or being noticed for and having expressed a positive quality about me, getting a compliment, being told my spouse believes in me, or that they're grateful for our relationship. Being given encouragement or empathy, or just being told how they care about me and what they care and why they care. Those verbal expressions are sometimes the thing that a person needs most. And that would be their love language. The next category is receiving gifts. So again, everyone might be saying, well, everyone likes receiving gifts. Yeah, everyone probably does like receiving gifts that they like, not the hideous chair. But some people are keyed in specifically to the tangible receiving. It's not that somebody whose love language is words of affirmation doesn't also like getting gifts, but if they got gifts and never got praise, they wouldn't feel cared about and nourished in the same way. And if they got lots of words of praise and the gifts were not as often, that might be fine. And gifts are not necessarily, you know, big splashy things. It could be, you know, making sure I get the CD I wanted that just came out. It could be a really thoughtful, you know, expensive birthday gift, but it could be a little something. Getting me the treat I like from my favorite store for Shabbos. Just because, you know, I really enjoy that. The next category of language, love language, is quality time. For some people, the thing that they want most is quality time with their spouse, whether that's going for a walk, or having a meaningful conversation, going out and doing something together, doing a joint project together, playing a board game, whatever it is, the thing that's the most important is that you want to spend time with me and you make time for me. Sometimes is the most important. And the last of the five love languages is physical touch. But this is really referring to non-sexual physical touch. Intimacy, physical intimacy is important, but it's a separate part of marriage from what we're talking about in terms of the five love languages. It's important, but separate. This is talking about, I feel nourished and sustained by a hug, by an arm around my shoulders, sitting close on the couch while we talk or just read. Sometimes that's the thing that will make somebody feel the most cared for or appreciated or loved. So those are the five that Gary Chapman came up with. And in thinking about, you know, kind of going beyond that, I want us to think about a few other categories. Some of it overlaps, but there's a bit of a different focus in the next few that I'm going to talk to you about. It's not just about feeling love, but when we're trying to solidify our connection and create a relationship where we feel nourished and sustained, that our marriage is a source of sustenance and nourishment, there are other emotional needs that need to be met in order or in addition if those emotional needs are met, then we're going to have that feeling. So one is to feel secure. Some people need that feeling that I'm your priority. I feel secure in this relationship. I feel sustained and nourished because I feel like I'm your priority. And, you know, examples of that could be that you, you know, look to me to talk things through or ask about things before anybody else. If that feels like one of your core needs, you probably have examples of times and places that it could, if it would, it should have or would have, or you would have liked it to go different because you would have felt much more that you're there, you're your spouse's priority. So if you're feeling like that's a space that's sore subject or not fulfilled, then you want to think of the times and the spaces where an opportunity to make you feel secure or feel like a priority passed by, and think about what you'd like to get in order to feel that. All too often we have examples in the negative. You didn't this, and you called your mother first, and you went, you asked your friend before you asked my opinion. You listened to your friend's opinion before you listened to my opinion. And so there's a lot of negative as opposed to the positive. When we're creating a gift registry, we want to make sure that we're wording things in the positive. I'd love it if when you had a piece of news, you shared it with me before your sister or your mother or your best friend. Another area is that sometimes people feel the need to, that they want to feel like their spouse believes in them. And that could take the form of hearing encouragement for things that I'm doing, being positive of about projects that I take on or want to take on, maybe supporting those projects in some way, practically speaking or emotionally. Again, you want to make sure that if this is an area that you're creating a registry where you're making a request in the positive. Some people have a need for a lot of conversation. It's not just words of affirmation, which is hearing you say something, but this is the idea that we're in conversation, we share with each other, we're open and discuss things with each other. And my emotional need is to feel like we do that. We share and connect in that way with each other. Another area some people feel like they have a need to feel like we tackle things with each other, whether it's the household or whether it's when there's kids or whether it's plans for a vacation. It's not like, oh, you go off and plan a vacation, which seems like it's a very, you know, nice thing that you plan a vacation, but I want us to do those kinds of things together, even though you think you're taking care of me and you're trying to show me how much you care by taking care of me and doing the whole itinerary, and yet I receive it like the hideous chair because my deep wish is for us to do things together. That would be, you know, the opposite of the last category that we're going to talk about in terms of emotional need, which is making someone feel special by taking care of them, you know, attending to them and their needs or being interested and on top of their health needs or their spirituality needs or their material needs. There are people who that would be the best thing in the world if their spouse, you know, said, okay, we're off this. Well, I'm taking care of all of the details. And the other person could love that, but there could be the other person who wouldn't love that and would feel upset that we didn't do this together. So different people have different orientations to these areas. And when you're a new couple, you don't have enough history with each other to know this yet. And sometimes even when you're an older couple, you don't, if you haven't discussed it, you don't have enough information to work smarter instead of harder. And you might have found that you've made lots of efforts in the past and they weren't received particularly enthusiastically. And so you stop making so much efforts, but then everyone sort of left feeling depleted, or at the very least not nourished. For young couples that have gone through this, you know, the beginning of the relationship is this crisis beginning, it's even more so that we need to think about how to help sustain each other. What are our core needs? Now, the extra wrinkle in this is that sometimes our core needs are about one more category, which is dependence versus independence. I like to feel like I still have my own sense of self versus I like to feel like we're in everything together. And that can be another area of conflict between a couple, which gets into attachment and boundaries. But the thing about creating this registry is that when we create a registry, we do a few things. It accomplishes a number of things. So let's do another kind of imagery exercise. And I want you to imagine that you and a friend are having a conversation. I want you to think about where you're standing and where your friend is standing. Now, in this time, Corona time, you might be standing 6 feet apart, depending. And if it's somebody who you've kind of taken into your bubble, let's say, you might be standing a normal amount of space apart, which is usually around 2-3 feet, maybe 4, in terms of social acceptability or social norms, what's normative amongst friends. But if you are telling them something private or a secret, you might move much closer. But if you were that close, trying to have just an average conversation, you'd feel uncomfortable. And these days, standing anything but 6 feet apart with many people would feel uncomfortable. So our desire and our needs and our comfort with closeness varies. And it's not just conversation and where we stand and where we are with conversation, but it's in terms of how much closeness we're comfortable with, the degrees of closeness we're comfortable with, when and how soon do we get comfortable with closeness. And certainly at the beginning of marriage and even beyond, people have different levels of comfort with closeness and certain types of closeness. And when somebody who has less comfort with certain types of closeness is married to somebody whose idea of love and connection is to sit face to face, really close, and just gaze into each other's eyes and have a conversation, that may or may not be comfortable for the other person. Or if I like somebody to, I like words of affirmation, and I want you to tell me how you feel about me and why you feel that about me. And what about you makes, what about me makes you feel good? And what it means to you that I'm this kind of person. And those words of affirmation that a spouse needs, if their spouse is less comfortable with verbal expression, can create tension in a relationship. So these needs that we have and these different languages, part of the issue that comes up for couples, which is why they don't wind up sustaining or nourishing each other, is because they don't know what their spouse wants. But sometimes what the problem is that they are uncomfortable giving it. And what ensues is that either if they don't know what their spouse wants, then their spouse is just left feeling hungry, or eventually maybe resentful. Or if they're a little bit more proactive, their spouse is going to start chasing them for what they want to get. None of these are pretty pictures in a marriage, and none of them lead to a couple feeling particularly nourished or sustained by what should be an interaction of love and care. And what that registry does is it creates a situation where I can know what my spouse needs, and I can figure out when I can afford what. Especially in crisis, when we're often turned inwards, like we talked about last time, and we're often not as available to anything other than our own emotional world and what's stressing us out. But even beyond, but certainly during that time, it's really, really important that we be able to give, but at a price point that we feel comfortable with. And when we have a registry in front of us, we might be able to afford the lesser gift today, but know that we want to be able to afford the bigger gift, and we have to be mindful and plan for or prepare for being able or ready or open to giving that bigger gift. And we can do that so much better without this push and pull and boundary discomfort between us when I have a registry, when I have a way for you to see and for me to see what my spouse needs to feel good and what I need to feel good. And I have the latitude to give what I can when I can. Now, there's something that gets in the way of that working that I want to head off at the pass so that you all can spend some time creating your registry and using it properly. What is that? That people find problematic that gets in the way. So last week, we talked about the common assumption that people come into marriage with of, if my spouse really cares about me, he or she will know what I want without me having to say. And we debunked that assumption and explained that the reason people come into marriage thinking that, if my spouse really cares about me, if my spouse really loves me, they'll know what I want without me saying, is because we're coming in from a childhood place where either our parents did know what we wanted, did anticipate what we wanted, or didn't, and we wished for them to. And we look at our spouse and say, well, if you love me, you will also, as opposed to understanding that our parents didn't love us enough to know, they knew us enough to know. And that our task, like we said last week, is to help our spouse know us enough, not love us enough. But there's another problematic assumption, common assumption that people come into marriage with. And that assumption kind of follows from the first one. And it goes like this: if I have to ask for what I want, even if it's given, it isn't a real demonstration of love. That people kind of hold back, and along with thinking, if you loved me enough, you'd know, it comes along and says, if I have to ask, then you didn't love me enough to just give it. And again, problematic because you don't necessarily know what I want. Just because I have to tell you what I want. And if you give it because now I told you what it is, that is a demonstration of love. Think for a moment, how many people who get a gift off their gift registry think, whatever. I mean, I told them what I wanted, so like, big deal. So they got it for me. Nobody thinks that. Nobody has a different expectation other than somebody's going to look on my registry, see what I need, see what they can afford at this point, and they'll give it. And then that's great. I'm so appreciative, truly appreciative. They took the time. They took the effort. They did what they could. I didn't have to ask. I didn't have to tell. I didn't have to guess what they could afford or push them to afford something they couldn't afford right now. Maybe they got me a small engagement gift, but they're going to be doing better, and then they're going to give me a bigger baby gift. Not that people think like that, hopefully, but in terms of marriage, if my spouse isn't up to giving this today, but they're interested in what's on my registry and they're interested in giving me what I need to feel loved and cared about, diminishing that by looking at it and saying, but I had to ask. So no, it's just not that great. Is inappropriate. It's common because we have that childhood wish for being known and seen and attended to without having to verbalize, because that's more childhood caretaking as opposed to the adult. I say, I express, I tell. I get cared for, and that care that I asked for and got is not less, not any more so than somebody getting you something off of your gift registry. Filling somebody in is part of marriage, and letting go of the childhood wish for kind of magical thinking wish for being known without having to talk is something we have a hard time letting go of, but we really need to. The other thing that creating a gift registry does is it gives us a non-threatening or non-judgment way of discussing some of my needs for independence. I can say that one of the things I'd like to get is, you know, appreciation or understanding for needing to sit and read and have some time, and that I'd appreciate or I feel cared about when you attend to my needs. It falls into that category of, do I attend to you? Do I spoil you in the way that you need to be spoiled? some people want to be spoiled by somebody being very attentive to their health and protecting their health. Somebody else would find that suffocating. Don't ask me if I called the doctor, and don't ask me if I'm allowed to eat that, and don't ask me if I... Some people, they might not like it, but they do like that their spouse is very busy with that. But there's another area of, can you be busy with my need for some introvert time? Can you be protective of it? I would really like for you to be protective of that need of mine. And so my difference in boundary and connection needs can be built into my registry, and they can be seen for what they are, not a rejection of other, but a core need that some people have that doesn't have anything to do with who their spouse is or how much they love their spouse, but it has to do with their own makeup, their own wiring. And if I can ask for that as a gift, then that can often shift things for people and the other person in terms of how they approach making room for that. Do I feel resentful that you want to be on your rocker with a book? Or do I get to feel like I'm giving you a gift, and so we are actually in this together? These are the things, this is these two concepts, last week's of making sure you understand yourself and what you need in various scenarios, and this week in terms of understanding what you need in order to feel cared about and loved, and communicating that to your spouse, form sort of the bedrock of establishing and attending to your foundation and making sure that it's solid. And the next two installments are going to be about looking towards how do we now navigate some of the things, some of the struggles, and some of the conflicts. How do we make sure that we do that in a way that doesn't erode the relationship? And how do we do that in a way that can not just keep our connection, but in some ways deepen our connection? There's all sorts of joint things we can do to deepen our connection, but one of them is healthily navigating crisis and struggle. And unfortunately, for a lot of you who kind of became couples during Corona, you have a lot of opportunity for that. But sometimes it takes a particular understanding of skills and tools, which is what we're going to address next time. So, thank you all.